Get ready.
Hello, welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week, usually, and we get to know our guest. It is episode 183 of the Weekly Cooldown, and it is February 24th. Here we are, basically the end of Black History Month. Next week starts March. Paul will be invited back onto the show. If I have to remind you that Paul is white and therefore is not welcome on the February episodes, that is on you. No, I love Paul. But we are gonna jump right into our final Black History Month episode. As you know, if you've been a long time listener, or even just a recent listener, usually we take the month of February, talk to Black creators, Black gamers, and everyone else in between who happens to be Black. I hate that term, happens to be Black. And we kind of discuss, what's going on in the circles we run in on the internet, and how we can do better, what is going well, and, you know, where we need some support. So without any further ado, I've welcomed back Sebastian from the Pro Nerd Report for this episode.
Hey, how are you doing today?
How are you?
Man, I'm doing really good.
You're the guest. I need to know how you're doing.
I'm doing really good. Excited to be back here on this show. Excited to talk all that sweet nerdy goodness and, you know, talk about some really important things because, you know, a lot of people don't know sort of the struggles and like the different obstacles we have to overcome as Black creators, you know?
Yeah. And that's what we're going to be talking about. We are Black podcasters. We are Black gamers and also Black podcaster gamers. It's a lot. And people, I don't think people realize that it's a lot sometimes. So we're going to be digging into Black podcasting. We'll do some Black gaming representation, talk about creating while Black and so on. And it should be fun. But before we do that, Sebastian, what have you been playing this week?
Man, I've been playing Hi-Fi Rush, which is, you already know, if it's that game that was shadow dropped for Xbox made by Tango Gameworks. It is amazing in a lot of different ways. It kind of combines, I call it like the soup of video games because like soup combines a whole bunch of like ingredients to make something that's better than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. And this game is sort of like that because it's like it combines elements from Devil May Cry and Kingdom Hearts and Guitar Hero. And each of them are kind of better combined than they are separately. And I think it's a really fantastic game. And especially at that $30 value that they're selling it for on PC. And then it's also on Xbox Game Pass. So it's a really fun time. Have you played this one yet?
I have, and I've beaten it as recently. Actually, we spoke about it on our last episode with Maris Mermaid. It was a fun time all the way through. As I said, I think on your last episode, because I think it just released when you were on, and as I said with Maris on the last episode, for some reason, when I saw it drop, I was both very excited for the game and I also felt like, why isn't the main character Black? And I have no idea why that was my gut reaction, but eventually I calmed down and I was like, never mind, it's fine. but it was like a weird kind of gut punch where I was like, why is this the guy? It should be a Black man. But I ended up playing it and loving it. It was a really, really, really good surprise entry to the kind of Game Pass, especially. But to, like, Tango Gameworks' repertoire, right? They're usually known for these kind of surreal kind of horror games. But instead, this time, they are going into, like, almost like a platformer, action RPG rhythm game.
Yeah, it is very different than their usual works. Like, they are very much known for that horror genre, and, you know, that's when you hear of a Tango Game Works game, that's exactly the genre you think of. But this feels like a fresh new beginning for them, and I almost want them to lean towards making games like this and like making that horror-centric gaming on the side, so to speak, kind of alternating, and very much the way you see Injustice and Mortal Kombat, like, alternate their games. I feel like that would be a cool vibe from them.
Yeah. And, I mean, to see what else they can come up with, like, even if it's not a rhythm game specifically, they clearly have some ideas in their head about, like, what constitutes a good beat-em-up, a la, like, a Devil May Cry, and what constitutes, like, a good platformer, and what constitutes a good, like, those parts, if they separated them, I would be really interested to see what they come up with.
Yeah, for sure. I also want to shout out that there's some solid representation for us in that game. Like, the character Macaroon is pretty solid. I really enjoyed his character.
Yes, Macaroon is a great piece of representation. And we'll get into other character representations later. But first, let's talk about podcasting and content creating. So first, remind people what it is you do over on your shows and what content you create.
So, yeah, you can find me at the Single Player Experience podcast. It is a podcast dedicated towards single player gamers to find really good single player games to play. It's sort of like a book club for single player gamers. So we like over there at that show, we interview devs about their latest upcoming games, why you should check them out. We also talk to different people about like their video game recommendations or like why a video game spoke to them on a personal level. So we do different things like that. And then we talk to just different people in the gaming space who are different people who love single player games. And we kind of come together and really just talk about some of the good, some of the bad, some of the indies, everything you're sleeping on, and kind of just have a good time doing that. Recently, I've talked to the creator of a little game called The Night Witch. It's an indie game that a lot of people should check out. We also had a deepest discussion episode on the Persona series and which Persona games different people should check out depending on what type of gamer you are. So if you like that kind of thing, you should definitely check out the Single Player Experience podcast.
Yeah. Now, how did you come up with this idea? Like, I guess, why did you make it a podcast and not say like a blog or something?
You know, I'm one of those people who sort of takes advice from when I hear it. And then I got a kernel of advice from different creators, and they were just talking about like their avenues, whether it be TikTok, YouTube, podcasting, whatever have you. They were like, always find a niche that no one else is doing. And I looked around and I knew I knew what I wanted to talk about, but like I looked around and I saw no one else was talking about single player games. Like it's always video game news. It's always like, it's always gaming for Xbox, gaming for PlayStation, gaming for Switch, like very specific pockets, but no one was talking about like the single player gamer. And I felt like that was kind of a niche that it speaks to me on a personal level, because that's for one, all I play for the most part. And then it's also one of those things to where I'm like, it's an opening there. And I wanted to see if that opening is there for a reason. If people knew, hey, no one should talk about this in the first place, or if that was just an opportunity. So I decided to jump in. And so far it feels like a solid opportunity.
I would say so. I didn't think of it first, so, you know. Very good, though. Very good. Now, let's talk about your experience creating, right? Just as a creator, right? Like, if we could remove the blackness from us, how has podcasting, the experience podcasting, been? Also, how long have you been doing the show?
I'm about 5 months into the show, so so pretty much a newborn baby in the podcasting space, but I've really come to enjoy it. I think like I've met a lot of people along the way, and in this 5 months I think I'm at episode 101 right now, so a lot of episodes. We've recorded quite a few episodes. And in that time, I've met a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life. And just removing like the blackness element from it, it's like, I love hearing other people's stories and how they connected personally with video games. Mm-hmm. And that kind of really spoke to me, like hearing people, like hearing how someone may have lost their job and this and happened to find this game to play. And this is why this game resonated with them so hard, because it helped them get through a hard time in their life. Or like how, for instance, like I lost my grandmother during the pandemic, and there was a game called A Walk with Yaya where you just simply walk and talk with your grandmother. And that game spoke to me on a very personal level. So it was one of those things to where I'm like, people have so many stories outside of just playing a game that connects them to gaming. And, you know, I wanted to kind of like see where that idea would take me. And podcasting kind of came about because I tried the YouTube thing, doing YouTube ideas, like YouTube reviews and such like that. But I was a newborn baby when it came to like creating stuff. I had never like picked up a camera and recorded myself. I had never edited like any sort of videos or anything like that. I've written before, but you know, outside of like school and maybe like some journalistic pieces here and there, I've never actually like expressed a creative side of me to the public before. So all this was brand new.
Yeah, it can be a little daunting. I have a degree in, you know, journalism and communications and stuff like that, but I was always geared more toward writing. And I had tons of people always telling me, like, you've got a voice for radio. And I'm like, I do not believe you, and I have no reason to believe you. But hearing it one day from a teacher after I had applied to a job and not gotten it, but my teacher at the time was the executive director. He was like, you know, you do have a good voice for radio. And I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to start a podcast, but it can't be boring, because I won't want to do it if it's boring. So it has to be something relevant to my interest, but also like a way to showcase that I can create, right? That I can speak into a microphone eloquently, that I know what I'm talking about, and that I know how to interview. And so this 5-year project of mine has still been going. I'm tired, but it's fine. but it's very relatable, right? When you say that you're kind of new to it, because even though I have the degree, I was still like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I can't remember what I learned in school. I'm going to buy this Blue Yeti and I'm going to hope for the best. And it's worked out. I mean, as long as you kind of stick with it, you do kind of build the skills all over again. You know, you get some calluses, so to speak, and then suddenly you cannot stop podcasting.
So let me ask you, do you feel like at this stage in the game, 5 years of doing this, do you feel like this is your passion now?
Yes and no. There is a real want to continue, and for the most part, I think it's just because I really enjoy talking to people like you and the other folks that I've had on. And I really enjoy engaging with what I put out there. Like if someone hears my stuff and they come back later and want to talk about it, I love that. So really, I don't know if it's my passion, but what is my passion is talking, engaging with people, off microphone, you know, in Discord or on Twitter or whatever, and really having like some pretty deep discussions about things you don't always think would be deep discussions, you know? We're talking about video games. Most people talk about a video game for 5 seconds and then they walk away. I have learned how to talk more in depth about video games. This show is about talking not only about video games, but kind of seeing what you can kind of extract from someone's personality by talking about video game and video game news, right? I'm a really true believer in like, if I tell you about a new story about unionization efforts at Blizzard that you, depending on what you focus on in that story, it can tell me a lot about you, right? And depending on how you respond to unionization efforts or how you respond to Activision Blizzard, I can tell a lot about what you care about and what you don't care about. So that's really been my focus, is trying to make sure that I'm still chatting with people, because I like to chat, and I hope other people like to chat with me. And that's really where the passion kicks in, is I just want to pick everyone's brain and never shut up.
So, you know, a lot of people don't know how much work goes into podcasting, whether it be like the behind the scenes stuff, the gear, the setting up guests, or actually like setting up a template of what the show is going to be about.
Yeah.
You know, what part about like the behind the scenes part do you feel like, one, gives you the most trouble, and then two, that you're the most passionate about?
I have a question. Why are you interviewing me? No, I'm kidding. I hate doing prep work. I really, really do. But I've learned that without the prep work, there is no show, right? So I've learned to really enjoy research at the very least. So on a regular episode, I'm researching topics. I'm researching my guests, whoever they may be, if I don't already know them. And I'm trying to curate what would be not only good to talk about, but also that's prescient, right? It's a weekly show, so we have to figure out what's going on in the world that is still relevant by the time Friday hits, because that's when the show comes out. And a lot of that is kind of heavy to do sometimes, especially if the news is particularly either slow, right? Sometimes there is no news to talk about. Or if it's really, really heavy topics, I have to decide, like, are we really going to go into this today? Do I have the bandwidth? Do I want to put that on now, Paul, right? Do I want to talk about that with him? Does he want to talk about it with me? And does our guest want to talk about it at all? And so it's a lot of, like, brain function just to put out one, hour long episode. And it's both incredibly tiring, but also, like, at the end of it, we produce something that I think is pretty good. So it's all worth it.
The reason why I asked is because, like, I wanted to see what your answer was going to be in the same vein as mine. Because, like you said, I think some of that prep work does feel tedious at times, but it also is, like, so rewarding to see something you put, like, hard work in to come to fruition at every episode. You know?
And again, it's kind of skills building, right? Making sure I have the questions lined up, making sure that I can comprehend the stories that other folks have written, digest it into a headline where someone can listen to what I'm saying and understand the story for the most part, right? The gist of the story. And then also condensing the headline for our later discussion into one where the guest understands it in real time, and can then chat about it further. It's a lot of writing and it's a lot of interview prep, right? And those skills are still important to have, I think, if you're going to have a podcast like this, or even a podcast like yours, right? Like you said you do some interviews yourself. So, like, I'm sure you're doing a lot of research of your subject, and you're doing a lot of research about their games or whatever game they want to talk about, and then curating some kind of question and answer off of that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You're spot on, because, like, a lot of the space that I've been focusing on has been on the indie side of things. So, like, talking to these indie devs, trying to see, like, what their process has been like, what's their origin story, like, whether or not the game's final result was the original, like, idea, and, like, what changed over the course of the development cycle. So it's like you said, it's a lot of prep work, and then it's every once in a while, it's like, is playing a game right before you talk to them to kind of, like, talk about how the game feels and how the game, like, how, like, different aspects of the game came to fruition, whereas, like, you see a game and you think to yourself, like, oh, I know exactly how that's going to play. And sometimes it plays exactly like that. Other mm-hmm. times you're like, oh, this played nothing like the trailer. Like, how did that come about? So you're right. It's a lot of prep work. It's a lot of homework, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's also, you know, a little bit of the gaming nature of, like, trying to think deeper of, hey, I'm enjoying this game, but why am I enjoying this game, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Have you had a chance to chat with, like, is there a favorite episode or a favorite chat that you've had that folks should check out?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think one of them that I think where I'm chatting with a dev is that I'd recommend people check out is the upcoming title is called Lucid. By Eric Manahan and the Lucid Studios. That game is incredible. I think it has the potential to be the next Hades, and in the gaming space. And me and him just chat about different aspects about the game, different things that, different what people should expect, like the origin story of that game. And then another interview was with the creator of Cygnus League Racing. It's almost like a game that's very similar to Twisted Metal in a mm-hmm. sense, and it's a game that's coming out pretty soon here. And just talking about like how they had what happened in their development cycle, what it's like to develop a game in 2023, and you know, just whether or not like different games come out and that inspires them to twist everything, or do they stick to the vision of what they initially set out to do. So really good feedback and really good like banter between me and the guest. And I think if you're interested in just some of the behind the scenes minutia of like what it takes to develop a video game, you should definitely check those episodes out.
Yeah. Very good. Now, let's get into like, let's paint ourselves, right? We are mm-hmm. Black creators. It can be kind of daunting, I guess, being a Black creator. So I guess my first question to you is like, have you run into any kind of issues so far? I'm hoping the answer is no.
I haven't run into any issues where it was specified that it was because I was a Black creator. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like I have talked to some other creators in the space that said, you know, like it feels like it is harder for Black creators to get traction mm-hmm. for some, whether it be like a credibility thing, whether it be like whether it be because like some of us don't have like some of the backgrounds that some of white creators have, or maybe it's because like, well, maybe it's because the subject matter isn't about something that we're expected to be experts in, like say, and I'm not saying these shows are like bad or anything, but like when you hear of a Black podcaster, you almost expect it to be more so like spilling the tea type of podcast.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And versus our sports talks, you know, like, mm-hmm. and I think when it comes to like tech and stuff like that, if you're not like MKBHD or anything like that, it's kind of hard for people to really pay attention to you versus all the other creators out there. Like sure. I don't think we're given as high of a chance as some other creators just because of that. But you know, it's also I think a little more daunting because like some of us as far as like we as a people who listen to podcasts usually listen to very specific types of podcasts, so mm-hmm. it's almost us in the tech space, you know, like I would love to hear or see like information of how many like Black men and women listen to tech podcasts, listen to gaming podcasts, you
sure.
know, and then I think I would have more of a fair comparison of like, how hard is it? I mean, how much representation do we pay attention to ourselves of our own creators, you know?
Absolutely. I see. I hear sometimes that like it can be especially hard when you get a little bit more notoriety as a Black creator, simply because you kind of invite a kind of person to come after you, right? And some people are not necessarily looking for those negative interactions, right? They've built a following, a community based on whatever content they've created, not based on the fact that they are black. And they, you know what I mean? Like, again, I hate to use the term, but they just, quote, so happen to be black, right? Mm-hmm. They also happen to be a gamer or a Twitch streamer, and so many other things. And you invite people to come notice the first thing about you, not the, you know, the other kind of layers that you have. And I know that that's been hard on a lot of Twitch creators, especially over the years. Twitch has gotten better about it, you know, filtering out certain hate speech and stuff like that. But I have not yet run into any issues. I'm black and gay, so sometimes that could pop up. But so far, 5 years of podcasting, not a single slur. So we're doing okay. Not that I expect listeners to come into your DMs and tell you like, "Hey, you sound black" or something like that, but. How do you think listeners react to knowing a creator is black? Right. Like, we are behind the microphones, and unless you're putting a picture out of yourself or something like that, mm-hmm. you're not always going to know. No. You're not going to know anything about anyone unless they tell you. So what do you think is like a listener reaction, I guess? That seems like a weird way to put that. But like, do you think it can be positive? Do you think it can be negative? I'm sure it can be both.
Here, I have a scenario for you to where I feel like, you know, and this is a real life scenario, so I kind of want some feedback as well as like telling you kind of how I feel about like this, and I think that it kind of like approaches the question too. So like, I am a podcaster just like you who have you know, like, who quote unquote happens to be black. You know, mm-hmm. it's like I'm transitioning the podcast to being both a audio podcast and a video podcast. Mm. But I think some of my worry about the visual side of things is like, how are people going to react when I do have a episode, or when they see the show for the first time and they're like, "Oh, it's a black dude talking about video games," you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, what's the general discourse going to be? Or is someone going to be like, "Whoa, I was listening to him this whole time," you know, like, and they didn't hear the episodes where I emphasized about like a topic about being black, or like where I made an off comment about like, you know, as a black man, I didn't play this growing up because of X, Y, and Z and such like that, you know, like, because I, you know, like, I either wasn't able to, or we were only had like certain games that we had like a couple of games that I was able to play like during the week because my mom worked or different things like that, you know, like, mm-hmm. what do people think of when they see a black creator behind, like, when the veil comes down and now they see like, "Oh, this is what the guy I'm listening to looks like," you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good question, because I guess it can go through the head of anyone, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you are so used to being, like, there was a big uproar about, I want to say his name was Dream, right? The Twitch mm-hmm. streamer Dream, where he did a quote unquote face reveal, right?
And yeah, I remember.
There was a uh-huh. huge thing about it. People were going crazy. There were some people who, you know, thought that Dream was very handsome. Other people thought that Dream was kind of, you know, not so handsome.
Yeah.
And there was a real back and forth on the internet about, you know, which side is correct or whatever. And, you know, that I think that kind of thing can happen to anyone, but especially when you are a black creator, I think a lot of people have the same reaction, but also with an added layer of prejudice, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we spoke about it in our last episode, but like, a lot of people throughout my life have called me an Oreo, largely because I don't quote unquote sound black, right? I speak with a certain kind of inflection that makes people think that I guess I am white. And actually, in certain circles on the internet where I've had to, you know, go into gaming spaces and I've chat with people and, you know, we're talking about video games, and then they find out that I am black, they are surprised, right? And I think that is because there's that added layer of prejudice where they expect a black person to sound like a certain type, right? A certain mm-hmm. way. And then they see you get on a camera or take a picture of yourself and they are deeply confused, but not questioning themselves about why they are confused, questioning you, right? Like, are you actually black? Yeah, why wouldn't I be? You know what I mean? Why do you talk like that? Ascribing you words again, like Oreo, things like that to make you almost gaslight you into thinking like, have I done something wrong? Right? Like, is there something wrong with the way that I am that you don't like? Or that doesn't agree with your bias? And so I guess my answer, my very long answer to this is like, it's hard either way, right? You may go through some kind of issue where someone who has been listening to your podcast is like, oh, yikes. But really what you have to ask yourself and remember, I think, is that you are who you are, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You absolutely did not ask to be born this way, but here you are nonetheless. And it is not a question of why or who you are. It is why they think they should be entitled to think that you couldn't possibly be black, right? Yeah. Like the idea that they are that they are so surprised by your blackness should be a reflection of them, not you.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. And it's one of those things when you're thinking of your show and such like that, and you're always worried. I'm like, is this action going to benefit my show? Because it's almost like a PR sort of thing, mm-hmm. you know. Like you always think of while you're creating this show, you're thinking to yourself, I'm like, if I act a certain way, it's a representation of my show as well, you know. Absolutely. So I'm like, you can't come out on Twitter and say some crazy stuff, or else, you know, like it's a bad reflection on you and your show. So mm-hmm. it's one of those things to where you kind of, it's just one of those things I was thinking of in the back of my mind when I was making that choice of like, hey, I'm also going to move to YouTube. And I was just like, whoa, people, like, this is probably going to be the first time some people know that I'm black. Like, as, you know, if they haven't heard every single minute mm-hmm. of every single episode,
that is. If they haven't visited your Twitter yet.
Yeah, or different things like that, you know. So, like, it's almost like that sticker shock scenario when mm-hmm. you go into a store and you're like, oh, it costs this much, you know?
Right, but, yeah.
Yeah, I have a question for you. It's like, do you remember Nibel on Twitter? Like, the guy who was...
The name is familiar.
So Nibel is a guy, or girl, because we only got his moniker, that he had like that dopey looking anime character. Let me think of Mob Psycho. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he was always breaking down news and different things before everyone else. Like it was who.
Yes, I do. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
And we never saw what this person looked like. It was always just the Mob Psycho face, mm-hmm. you know, like. It was always that face, but we are Mob 100, by the way. Mm-hmm. But we never got to see what he looked like, and yeah, it makes me wonder, like, what if Mob just showed his face one day and it was just a black man? Like, how sure. would the world react to that? You've been getting your news for this long from just a black dude. Like, you know, would there be some discourse? Would people be shocked? Would people be appalled? Like, what would that reaction be like? You know.
I think it's that idea that there are going to be people on the internet who are nasty, right? Mm-hmm. There were people who knew of certain streamers and podcasters for years, knew they were black, and still went to their channels and, you know, trolled them and low-key called them names and stuff like that, but still would go to their streams and be allowed to consume that media. And I think in any case, when you are faced with the reality of the person that you are getting your, news from, you react a certain way. And again, I think it says a lot about people on the internet if there is a viscerally, like, I don't want to say grossed out, but like a visceral kind of gross, kind of weird reaction to it. If you are unable to just accept it for what it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That there is just a guy or a girl giving you your news, who, again, just so happens to be black, then, you know, there's something wrong with you. Like, you have an issue, a prejudice or a bias that has made you react this way. And again, I would extend that to the internet at large, right? Because once one person reacts that way, it's kind of like a domino effect where you get other folks kind of revealing biases that they probably didn't know they had. Other folks trying to defend, a person who's just done a face reveal, but also at the same time revealing their own kind of biases that they didn't know they had, right? Like, everyone has these really kind of visceral reactions to it. And I think it's hard to be a creator on the internet, in a world where you can get, feedback immediately. And it's hard to be a black one for that very reason, right? Because the feedback isn't always kind, and it's sometimes not without slurs.
yeah. So, I mean, it's just, you know how Twitter is. You know, like,
I do know how Twitter is.
Yeah, Twitter can be a vicious place at times, you know?
Twitter's nasty.
Yeah, it really is. So, I was just curious, because, like, we live in a world where, everyone has a voice and everyone has opinion, mm-hmm. but sometimes people shouldn't say things Mm-mm. just because they have a voice and have an opinion, you know?
No, it's hard. It's always so hard for me to say that because I don't want to say that I quote unquote believe in free speech, because that mm-hmm. the whole idea of free speech is warped and so much different, I think, than what folks may have thought it should be. But I do believe that, you know, if you got something to say, you should say it. But also, I believe that if you say it, you better be prepared for consequences.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure.
There's nowhere in this world where you are going to say some absolutely batshit, and get away with it, right? Like, I'm sorry. It's just not how it goes. It will eventually catch up to you if it doesn't immediately.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on the money there. It's like like we were talking about earlier, you represent yourself, and the words your words you say and the actions you do are reflections of you. So I'm like, you can say things all you want, but there's consequences for your like dialogue.
Yeah. Consequences for our dialogue right now. well, this has been a good really, first of all, I do low key kind of enjoy the questions being lobbed up back at me, because I can, like I said, I like to talk.
I think the best conversations in podcasts are back and forth conversations, just interviews, you know? So I like to throw
interviews and then re-interviews.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's move on to actually gaming, right? One question I love to ask folks about this month is black gaming representation, right? What games or characters are out there that actually have good representation of black folks? We spoke about Macaroon, a wonderful, big, smart man, and we love him.
Yeah. I mean, like, we have some representation. I think it's just, like, main protagonist representation, I think, is what's lacking. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. us as the main characters, and then, you know, like, I don't want it to be a discourse or narrative to where, like, we get one game and that game doesn't do well, aka Forspoken, and then we don't get any representation anymore because that one game didn't do well.
Right.
So, but as far as, like, representation, I've play games, and I like to highlight the representation when I do a review on the ProNerdReport.com or on the Single Player Experience podcast. Like, recently I played a game called Batora Lost Haven. You play as a black woman who is one of the last people left after apocalyptic sci-fi event happens, and then she is bestowed the power of the sun and the moon. And she almost acts as like the world's Green Lantern afterwards, to where she has to make like intergalactical choices, and your choices matter in that game. It's a really good game, very well written. It's very under the radar though, because it's like a smaller indie title. Another game I want to highlight where it has like good representation of us specifically is Grid Force: Mask of the Goddess. It's another indie game. Where you play as a main girl. She's got these nice flowing locks. Man, shout out to the hair in that game, because I feel like, despite the fact that she has pink locks, because it's almost anime-esque, it is very much like Afrocentric. And I'm like, I like that. I like the way that she's represented in that game. But like, in the game, you you play as Donna. You wake up in a strange land with no memory of who you are or why you're there. And thankfully, you meet like a squad of ladies that help you recover your memory, but also defeat like the like different goddesses in different parts of what remains in this world. Again, another post-apocalyptic kind of world, but it's done in a more sci-fi take, to where you're not like, it's not like The Last of Us, so to speak, where everything's like very realistic. This is like a game to where it's like almost like cyberpunk-esque, but it's also like a grid-based bullet hell game. It's a really fun game to play, but one of the things I have to shout out is like, it has so many of us, and by us I mean people, like black people in it. There are so many black women in this game, because like every character in this game is also a woman. Like there are no male characters in this game. There are a lot of people of different descent, like of different races and backgrounds and such like that. But like I would probably say a good 1/4 of the characters represented in this game are black women, and I played this game and I was just like, oh, I can't name another game with this much representation other than Horizon Forbidden West. Horizon Forbidden West had such good representation of black people in that game. From the side characters all the way to the NPCs. There is a village very early in the game that you meet, and there are like, I was just shocked to see how much representation was in that one village, the one of the first villages you meet in that game.
Yeah.
And then the fact that like the main antagonist, shout out to the queen herself, Angela Bassett, for like portraying that role, is like, she is the main antagonist in that game, and it absolutely kills it in that role. So I'm like, this has been a year, 2022 has been a year where we've seen a good cast of representation, not the type I think we should get seen, but like there are some games to where we're starting to see some representation there. What do you think about all this?
I think I'm getting a little bit more optimistic about black representation in video games. I find myself wanting no matter what.
For sure.
I spoke on the last couple of episodes about like the lack of kind of black horror game heroes, right? Like every horror game I've ever played, every survival horror game is a white guy or a white woman.
For sure.
And there just, I think, needs to be a little bit more representation, despite the fact that I think we have this idea that black men and black women in horror games are like, nope, I'm out. Like that can still be a good like in for a story, right? Like no one in a horror situation is trying to stay in the horror situation for the most part, right? They are trying to escape whatever situation they're in, especially if you use like Resident Evil 2 and 3 as an example. You're literally trying to escape the city where zombies have overrun. So I mean, just put a black person in there, right? It's the same story. It's just there is an added representation. There's also probably a whole different personality, right? Like, I don't think you can have Leon S. Kennedy as a personality on a black person. But I do think that if you like, you know, you could tweak it a little bit and suddenly, you know, Leon is completely different, but in a way that feels not ham-fisted, right, for either audience, black folk, white folk, whatever. but feels kind of natural to themselves and to the situation they're in. And I always want to kind of emphasize, like, I get the reason why most Black folks say, you know, if we were in a horror video game, we'd just walk away. We'd walk out. We'd leave. Mm-hmm. Because especially Black Americans, we live in a pretty fucked up situation already where we're kind of horrified by the things we have to see and experience. I get not wanting to put other Black people in a situation where they can't just walk away from it, or they can't get out of it very easily. But I think that removing us from that kind of equation doesn't really do us any favors either. We have to be able to see ourselves in every possible situation. In my opinion, we have to be able to kind of work out how and why we would be in these situations and what we can do about it. And I think putting ourselves in a horror game is one of those ways we do it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, we've been in pretty much every other genre as main protagonist, whether it be like the point and click adventure games of The mm-hmm. Walking Dead, whether it be like the mainstays of an action adventure game, or even sci-fi game at this point. So it does feel like a genre we've been sorely missing. But I'm gonna tell you what gives me hope that change is coming. Have you heard the news recently that Blumhouse, the studio that did like all the Jordan Peele movies, is like making video games now?
No.
All right, so
that's exciting.
So to catch you up, Blumhouse is like they are the studio that behind Get Out and Nope. They've also, I think, they did the Paranormal Activity movies, different horror movies. They always kind of do these like weird out of the box like horror movies. Well, anyways, they've announced that they're doing they're coming out with Blumhouse Games. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to start publishing games on a like a AA kind of level and an indie level, and they're going to be working with different people to bring their horror games to life. And I feel like Jordan Peele is that type of person mm-hmm. that loves that kind of challenge. And if we saw this with Justin Roiland and Squanch Games, you know, to where like they also brought like their vision to make High on Life at that time, you know,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
I can see something very similar happening with Blumhouse, to where they have, where we get a couple of horror games specifically with Black protagonists, where it actually has like a budget behind it, where like it be Jordan Peele himself or just other people, you know, like other indie creators doing that, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think we have any representation in that genre, but I feel like hope is coming because of that announcement.
Yeah, yeah. I could definitely see, especially Jordan Peele doing something like, I don't know if it would translate well to a video game, but like if you make Get Out a video game, I'll play the shit out of it. I promise.
Yeah, for real.
Like for real. That sounds really cool, though. I did not know that. That's good.
Yeah,
good
I mean.
Job.
Yeah, it just, they announced it like February 21st, so it's only like 2 days old, so it's very new news. So, you know, like, don't look for a change to come like next week or anything.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're still breaking news on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
So what about the Black hairstyle, right? So I'm thankful for the new Twitter account that just started in 2020. Are there Black hairstyles in the game? At Black Hair VG, if you want to follow, that actually goes through some games and tells you, like, are there Black hairstyles in this video game? And just looking at a few right now, right? So, Monster Hunter Rise, according to them, has at least seven Black hairstyles. They have dreadlocks, but it costs $1.49 as DLC. Wild Hearts, which just, released this week, I believe, or last week, has about 5 Black hairstyles. A few might be, you know, different, depending on who you ask. Forspoken doesn't have a character creator, but has some unique Black hairstyles. But as you scroll down, right, it's like Midnight Suns has at least four. Need for Speed has at least three. This one has four. This one has three. This one has none. This one has one. So it's like, if you take the average, I think you come out to like between one and five hairstyles in most video games.
I think that sounds right.
So what are we missing, right? What are developers not doing, I guess, to capture a more robust, I guess, array of hairstyles, especially black ones?
You know, for primary, I did an episode about this, not like when I first started the podcast, because this was a thing that was near dear to my heart. You know, like, we have very little representation when it comes to video game, when it comes to having black people as devs. I feel like, you know, with more devs in the room, whether it be like more devs at Blizzard, whether it be more like black devs at Sucker Punch or Naughty Dog or different things of that nature, it's like, once you see more representation working on something, you see a change of like of what the end result is going to be. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
So I don't know for sure, but I imagine in my head that there was probably a couple of black people who were in the room while Miles Morales was being made.
Yeah.
That the hairline and everything like that was on point for that game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think more of us in the room when games are being made can only benefit. You know, like, benefit hairstyles of black hair. Also, like, lips, nose, you know, like, ears. Just the general blackness of how we look outside of just having a big nose, big lips, and only four hairstyles, which are normally, like, dreads, if we're lucky, afro, almost like a bald buzz cut. Mm-hmm. And then there's, I would probably say, I'm missing one. What is the other one?
Afro. Oh, you said that.
Okay,
like afro, a Caesar, dreads if we're lucky. Caesar.
Yeah, and then I would probably say the other one is maybe where we have a ponytail kind of look, to where we have like long hair and it's in a ponytail. But other than that,
in a lot of games, it's like dreads, the Caesar, like maybe a fade, and you might get a braided hairstyle, but it's usually cornrows and it usually does not look good.
Yeah, cornrows. Yeah. I think that's a staple as well. And yeah, like you said, cornrows almost looks like they just put like,
right. Despite spiders. The fact that like you will have 50 options of mostly the same spiked hairstyle, like you can apply that logic to black hair as well, right? Like you can have a really big afro, you can have a short afro, you can have cornrows, you can have box braids, you can like, you could go into so much detail with the idea you've already developed. You just have to want to do that, the same way that you have you know, flipped the spiky hair from left to right or something like that. You know what I mean? Like it's all the same idea. You just have to want to do it. And I think that's a lot of what happens too, is that you get a lot of people who want to do these really like crazy spiked hair ideas and long flowing hair ideas. But like when they're like, okay, now we have to add braids of some kind, everyone's like, oh, the one type of braid I know how to do. You know what I mean? And no one thinks to like do a little bit more research or a little bit more work to like make an afro with that also doubles as a ponytail for somebody. Like, you know, you can do that with afros. Can you believe it? Like the work just has to be done too, I think. Aside from putting more black people in the room, the work has to be done as well for folks to see themselves as represented in like a Monster Hunter for once.
Oh yeah. And you know, the crazy thing is like with Unreal Engine 5 and the games getting more realistic, I'm also like optimistic that, you know, our hair will be better represented, you know, like that there'll be like a collective pool of like community hairs that devs can easily just go in and say like, okay, like we're adding 27 black hairs and this will be a free just a free template, so to speak, that any development team can use.
Yeah.
And I'm like, 27 is more than four. That's a better thing than what we got beforehand. But I think with Unreal Engine 5, if we can just get like 20 to 27 of those like hairstyles and let that be a free template for any developer, whether it be AAA, whether it be indie, to just use in that engine. And I think that's a huge win. At that point, you have no excuse not to include that in your game if you have a created character.
Final Fantasy 14 has a lot of modders and a lot of black people and a lot of black modders. And so what happens is you get folks who take their modding skills or learn to mod and they port in hairstyles or they create their own hairstyles and they mod their Final Fantasy 14 games. Sorry, Yoshi P, but people do that. And there's been a lot of talk, especially with regard to online games, where folks are like, just hire a modder to make your hair assets, right? Mm-hmm. And or like, you know, offer to buy those hair assets and port them into the game so that it's not just accessible to people with PCs. It can be accessed by the whole base of fans. And I get that there's a lot of maybe legal representation that has to be discussed about that. But do you think there's merit to devs kind of working with modders to import content into the core game, or am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy at all. And that's one of the reasons why I went to like just make it a free asset kind of route, because there's so much legal ambiguity there of like, and where you get into the notion of like, hey, why aren't these guys getting paid when they're the only people who make black hair in games,
right?
You know, like, there, and I agree with you, like, modders to me could solve a lot of problems we have in video games, not even just the hair part, but it's like, yeah, these companies are already dropping people left and right from studios like that. They are making millions of dollars and already letting people go. So it's hard for me to believe that they would pay the extra dollar for hair representation at that point, you know. But I would love it. I think modders are the way to go, and a lot of places I would love to see a lot of these people like that can mod and such like that. Maybe even come together to create these assets to maybe you can sell a pack to any development team that wants it, regardless of what kind of like style you make of your game, where you can do like maybe 20 realistic hair types and then 20 cartoon hair types. You know, like there's I think the person who does that and does it extremely well and markets it at least decently to companies is going to make a lot of money, or could make a lot of money. Like, here's what I'd recommend, and this is to you listeners who can mod out there. If you have that skill, take that skill, make something of it, and go to a GDC and show people that skill. And I'm like, get yourself paid out here in these streets, or at least make a name for yourself, you know?
In these streets.
But like, yeah, I want more of this. I think like the way we come about it and the way it happens can be so many different avenues. But like, whether it be a free pack, whether it be modders who are getting paid by studios, there's a lot of different ways we're going. But change doesn't happen unless we push for it. So we really got to probably arrange this, or at least, you know, start pushing the movement for this sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I very much agree. And I hope certain people who I know mod are listening to this, because we need your help.
We really do.
We're starting the Modder Avenger Initiative. And
you're one Let's of them. Not go into Unreal Engine 5 with these same core roles that we had since NBA 2K11.
Yeah, figure out how to mod in extremely realistic box braids. I love box raids. Put them in a game for once. Do whatever Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West did with black hairstyles, because they ran the goddamn gamut.
They did.
Just do it.
I only think there was probably like 6 or 7 in there, but they made each one of them look really nice.
Really good. Really, really good. If they can do it, you can do it. All right, so we're going to wrap up this show. And as always, we actually skip past the recommendations this time. we just want to know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
Man, you can always find me at the Single Player Experience Podcast, or you can hit me up at the contact page at theprodnerdreport.com. The Single Player Experience Podcast is the perfect place for single player gamers to find out about good single player games to play. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more about that, just in a video game recommendation sense, or find out about some real cool indie games that you didn't know existed but you really need to check out the Single Player Experience Podcast.
Very good. Very, very good. All right. As always, you can find me at Comic Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review or comment on Apple Podcasts. Well, you can only leave a comment. I should really fix this part. You can only leave a comment if you leave a review. So if you got something to say, give me 5 stars first and then hate on me. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember, you can support your favorite charities and support the show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian. Follow Corgian on Twitter. Doghouse Corgian is the name. DoghouseCorgian. And our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter as well. Dog_noise. DoghUnderscore NOISE. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace.
I'm Sebastian.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Peace, everyone.